Thank you for joining us for another podcast from the Commonwealth Club.
Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us this evening at the Commonwealth Club of California. We also welcome our listening audience, and we invite everyone to check us out online at commonwealthclub.org. I'm Robert Milton, a member of the club's art forum and your organizer of this program this evening. I'm very moved and pleased with the turnout on this topic. This is just amazing, though. Thank you all. Our topic and panel discussion tonight is about artistic creativity and consciousness, art as a positive energy in these turbulent times. The panelists are Matt McKinley, Deborah Reebok, and Michael F. Shea. Each panelist is going to get the opportunities to introduce themselves. After that, I will pose the questions, and then followed by Q&A. Okay? So we'll start with Matt first. You want to introduce yourself?
My name is Matt McKinley, and I am an art addict, and I'm not afraid to admit it.
Hi.
Hi, right? Hi. And I want to also acknowledge the presence of everybody here in the room. This is community, and this is what I love. And this is the reason that I got involved with artwork. Well, so I knew from a pretty, probably about my mid-20s, after I had a few jobs that required me to be somewhere 9 to 5 and do the same thing, routine, all that kind of stuff, that that was not the life that was for me. And I wanted to pursue something that I got a lot of joy out of, that kept me interested, that it got me engaged with people that thought outside the box, right? With people that were imaginative in their living and in their livelihoods and just just something that was stimulating, right? I plan on being here for a long time, and so the people I choose to engage with are people that I want to get something out of and give something in return, and not just talk about the grind and things that are wrong with life, but people that like to get into discussions about what can we do while we're here to create beautiful things and interact with each other in a way that's supportive, that adds something to our quality of life.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And why not make a buck while doing it, too? I always believe that if you do what you love, the money will follow. And so I keep charging ahead at that. And so I've been at it for about 22 years now, and it's been great.
Thank you, Matt. Yes. Mm-hmm. And Deborah, right before Deborah talks, I just want everyone to know that Deborah has a show right now called Natural Extractions. And please, after the talk, take a look and check it out. Great works. All right, Deborah.
Well, I want to thank everybody for taking time tonight. And my name is Deborah Reebok, and I am a visual artist and photo philanthropist who wants to make a difference in the world by bringing together creativity, charity, and community. I'm originally from the East Coast and was drawn to the West Coast because I have an affinity for technology. And once I got out here and was in the tech corporate life, I realized rather quickly I needed to find some balance because it is very high pressure, high stress, and time moves in an accelerated fashion. So I thought, what would support my needs for balance? And I wanted something that was visual, that was a small form factor, easy for me to carry around, highly mobile, and so photography really fit that bill. My attraction and preference for photographic representation is with patterns and sequences, and I'm drawn to dimension, shape, light, and movement, which you'll see reflected in some of the photos. I found that photography was a vehicle to open up my awareness about the greater world of art that is in front of us every day that we just don't take time to stop and look at, like shadows, like the way branches are arranged on a tree, designs in buildings, and those patterns and exist for a moment, and then as soon as the light changes, the time changes, they're gone. So that fit with some of my business background because I look at patterns and trends. And I found that the affinity for those objects opened up my world, both inwardly with the meditative repetition of various sequences and patterns, as well as outwardly. So as an example, there's a photo in the lobby. It's circular. It's this giant orb. And when I was in Tokyo last year, we stumbled upon this fountain water park. And this orb was fascinating. There was water coming out of everywhere. It had all kinds of holes and water just all over the place. But it was in an interesting rhythm. What struck me even more was when they turned the water off. I could see the structure, and I wanted to just walk into that orb and be transported to another world. And so photography has helped open my eyes to the world around me. It's brought together my business, tech, and art in a way that has expanded my consciousness beyond anything I could think of.
Mm. All right. Thank you, Deborah.
Well said.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And Michael.
Hi, good evening, and thank you all for being here. This is very exciting. It's exciting that this is happening live. We've rehearsed for this, so to be together. My favorite color is purple. Enough said. That's me. I'm a psychotherapist. I'm an integrative psychotherapist. And what that means is we focus in integrative psychotherapy not just on what the complaint that people come in, but we focus on the strength. Where is the area that the person who's coming in to sit with me, inviting me into their life, where is there a place of resilience? And that's the place and space that I often find that when I sit with somebody becomes the spark of creativity. And that becomes the intersection point for me, not only as a therapist and the science of doing psychotherapy, but the art of doing psychotherapy. And what drew me to this way of life is, I was supposed to be a vocalist. This was not supposed to happen. My plan was different, but the universe takes us to places that we grow the most. And I learned very early on that the sound of someone's voice, how they spoke, when they spoke, what they said, the cadence of what they said, it had music. It was music to me. Sometimes it was music I really didn't want to hear, particularly when I was told what I didn't want to be told. But it was also a music that told me about people's mood. It taught me about what was their timbre. And I listened. And when I sit with people, I listen and I hear songs. And I'll sometimes play a song. And it invariably has a point of synchronicity, whether it's the words or the composition. So really getting involved as a psychotherapist for me became as a result of being in an auditory way, very acute in my auditory skills, which was a blessing because I was dyslexic. And in the 70s, the scientific community didn't know what dyslexia was. All I knew is that I couldn't sit still, and I flunked skipping and scissors in kindergarten. That's all I knew.
Were you testing at the same time?
Right, exactly. But that powerful experience of being dyslexic and having a mother who was very tenacious in saying, my son is going to learn, she read all of my textbooks into a tape recorder. And what she did was at night, she would put the earphones on my ears at night so I could learn. And I would fall asleep. And I would retain what I needed to retain in order to learn. So my life, in terms of being a psychotherapist, I didn't get a get-out-of-jail card free in terms of the experience of the human condition. I had to deal with my own strife and deal with where that came together and how I could be creative. And that's what I bring to my work. And a lot of the work that I now focus on is mindfulness. I'm on the faculty with the Center for Mind-Body Medicine. And a lot of what we focus on is how to utilize a sense of self-awareness and self-care as the precipice on being healthy and with a variety of techniques. So that's a little bit about me and who I am and what I'm going to offer tonight for consideration.
All right. Thank you, panelists. All right. Now we'll pose my questions to the panelists. And the first question, what is your perspective on artistic creativity and consciousness as art, as a positive energy in these current and turbulent times? And I'll start with Matt first.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You're right next to me, you know.
Wow.
Right? We have to win 7:30, 8 o'clock?
Nah.
Oh, my goodness. I think one of the effect that creativity has on consciousness, especially against the backdrop of now, is the flexibility in thinking, is in the way that we can approach the problems that we all face as a collective and hopefully come up with some solutions that actually save not just culture but our planet, right? It's real. And we need some solutions that are going to just open up everybody's minds to the fact that the problems that we face affect everybody, no matter your race, your religion, your creed, whatever. You're human, you're a person, you're here. It's important. It's going to affect you. With creative practice, it allows everybody an equal opportunity to present their own voice, to add their own thoughts. Everybody, this is something that's free. Doesn't cost money, doesn't require education, doesn't require any kind of social status. It just requires an ability to share, an ability to put yourself out there. I think with just in terms of speaking of sharing and being vulnerable about what's important to you and your perspective on things, if more people did that, it kind of equalizes. Mm-hmm. And it'd break down some of the walls and the barriers that are created falsely and by, I don't know, mainstream media, fake news, hate speech, all these type of things that divide us. Creative practice can break all those things down. That's, to me, the most important and the baseline for why creative practice is a necessary part of a healthy culture.
Yeah.
All right. Deborah?
From my time spent working with special needs children to technology to mentoring young entrepreneurs, creativity has always been a hallmark. When I was growing up, they didn't know what to do with me in school. I mean, they just didn't know what to do because I was one of those folks that always questioned and looked at things completely upside down and saw something very, very different. And so creativity and consciousness opened you up to new perspectives. What I found is that by engaging in creative practice with my photography on a consistent basis, I now am thinking about other perspectives that I may not have considered. I'm now being able to appreciate new views and points of view, not just photographically or visually, but politically. And the stress of these times really has driven me more to focus more time on art because it is a place of respite. And it's had benefit in multiple ways. I mean, just physically, when I'm focusing on art, I'm not being driven by my calendar, which drives me crazy. And I don't have to worry about when's my next deliverable, when's the next meeting, who do I have to do this for, what, when, where, and how. As an example, I was I've been transformed by that new Mira building going up, you know, the one that kind of twists. And I've watched it change as it grows in height. And so I was doing a photo play date with a friend of mine, and I said, hey, in between lights, please make sure there's no traffic, because I'm going to lie down in the street and I want to take a picture of this building. And so he watched the traffic for me, thank God. And I lay down in the street with the camera upside down over my head. I had no concept of time until the horns started blaring. So it creates endorphins, those feel-good hormones, right, that make you feel enriched. And that's why I think that this topic is so important, that we need to find positive places to utilize our energy and to deflect some of all the inbound stress. Spiritually, it's opened me up to considering other types of conscious awareness, and I've been able to expand my spiritual practice that way, and I'm much in gratitude for it. Mm-hmm. And so that's how the consciousness is about art and the value of the positive energy, how it works for me.
Michael,
I had a funny thought. Can I share?
Sure.
On the way over in the car, I was thinking about this topic, and the scenario popped into my head. What if we sat Trump down with a coloring book, right, and just got him coloring? Yeah, right? Donald, that's a nice photo. That's a nice picture there, right?
I think that's too advanced for him.
Well, no, right?
Yeah. All right.
It would work. Because he's focusing on his coloring, and right. Then he'll start to talk about all the BS and stuff, what's really going on with him, all his insecurities and things. Donald needs a safe space. He needs a safe space.
Right. Michael, can you address from a therapeutic perspective?
Well, this is actually how I was going to start, so how synchronistic. So at the center, we do this exercise at the beginning of the 12-week group that we run and the end of the 12-week group, and we ask people to draw three pictures. And the first picture is, how do you see yourself now? The second picture is your greatest problem. And the third picture is your greatest problem solved. And you can only imagine what it's like to put Crayola crayons and literally three pieces of paper and markers in front of adult people. They're like,
right?
They have to be Picasso. Is there a grade? And we actually did this with a group of the faculty, did this when the riot took place in Baltimore, and they worked with the police officers and law enforcement in the community. And we do this. I did this when I went to Parkland to work with the Parkland community. And we use this as a way to understand what's going on subconsciously, because the subconscious mind speaks in images, in symbols.
Thank you.
It speaks to us in self-talk, our language, our vessels. What we say, how we say it, when we say it matters. So when we talk about art and consciousness, intrinsically they exist as one, the subconscious mind, all the components that are part of art and what goes into the creative process are the components that are part of the subconscious mind, and becoming aware of the subconscious mind through consciousness. And today, if we take a look at what you were saying, exactly. If we did that in the White House, we'd get not only a lot of information, but their central nervous system would calm down a little bit. They'd be a little less reactive, perhaps a little bit more mindful and thoughtful, and maybe think, what's going to be the consequence of how I speak? Because there is a consequence. And we now know that our words have a difference. If we want to look at through the mystical traditions like Kabbalah, the Kabbalists say that the universe gets 99% and we get 1%, which means we have an influence. If you want to look it through quantum physics or E=mc², we have an influence. We have an imprint. So what I think is happening right now in art is a necessity for us and a consciousness, because our social media platforms, our platforms that are going on as a result of art, need to be boosted in good messaging, in messaging that inspires us, lifts us up, because in many ways we're naturally attracted in fight or flight to negative. Mm. Naturally. It's easy. It's easy to galvanize people in fight or flight. Mm. You know, and governments know that, and advertising knows that. So I think your example is a brilliant one. I just don't think the receptivity would be quite. And living in Washington, D.C., it's not. There's not a lot of receptivity with some people. Not all people, but some. Yes. Yeah, those are my thoughts.
All right, thank you. For the second question, sort of ties right into that. How does creative thinking shape a group mindset? And I'll start with Matt, with you, Matt.
All right.
I'll say that again. How does creative thinking shape a group mindset?
I'm going to share.
Go ahead.
Mine? Okay, these words are not my own. His name is Koyo Kuo. He's the founding director of the raw material company in Dakar. He says, hardly any African language has a word for art as a universal definition of creative practice. The different disciplines and practices, which do indeed have characteristic words in all African languages, often manifest in combination and are defined as culture rather than art.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Nice.
Right.
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 I think that...
That's brilliant.
Yeah, it's very closely related to... and I'm trying to think about this big picture, you know, in terms of what can... And also practically, what can we do, right? Each one of us, with our desire to do good in the world and support our community. And I know there's a lot of artists here because I recognize the faces. Right. And I know there's people that love art here. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here and interested. So what do we do as art-loving people to make the world better tomorrow than it is today? How can you get involved? And what can you do to take some action? Because really, we can talk all night about how our positive mindsets can create some change, but if we don't do anything about it, right, it's just going to be the same, right?
Absolutely.
Exactly. Absolutely.
So in all levels of involvement with, you know, which is, I believe, our civic duty to be involved, right? We're here. We take advantage of what we have. It's part of, you know, living in a place where we, frankly, it's rough, but we ain't got it that bad,
mm-hmm,
right? Mm-hmm. We all have areas in our lives where we can contribute to something positive in our world going forward, and what can we leave for generations behind us? You know, through the – so besides my business is McKinley Art Solutions, where I do a lot of behind-the-scenes art stuff, one of the things that I've done that has given me the most pleasure in connecting with my community is the work that I've been able to do with ArtSpan. Right. If you don't know about ArtSpan, it's the organization that produces the largest open studios in the U.S.
Right.
Right here in San Francisco every fall. And we do our best to support the creative class.
You did a great job, actually.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Right. I know our executive director is here. She actually gets most of the credit. We board members just follow in her wake. Joe and Madonna. Right. But we have a common belief that there is a lot of power to creativity and what it can add to the culture. But we got to do something.
Got to do something.
I guess take action.
Action.
That's my takeaway from today.
Yeah. Well, action. Everybody will take away some action today. I promise you this.
All right, Deborah.
So my perspective on group thinking and creativity and group thinking comes from my business background. I do global strategic partnerships and sales to marquee clients. In order to do that, you have people that come to a table with a diversity of interests, different goals, different visions, different ways of achieving those goals. They want similar but different outcomes. And oh, by the way, they want to put their stamp on it. They want to put their fingerprint or thumbprint on it. And my approach, which has been very successful for me over whichever career I've been involved with, is much like the Olympic rings. So imagine the five Olympic rings. In the middle, you have three rings where one, all three converge. That convergence is what I strive for and what I think people bring to group thinking with creativity. To find the sweet spot of where's the mutual goals? What if we reframed the problem so it became a solution instead of a problem? How can we take action? What do we need to do and who's willing to do that? And how can we shape an outcome where everyone wins and everyone benefits? And that benefit can cascade through a variety of communities. So when I think of art span, to me, that is an intersection, that sweet spot in the community in San Francisco. And
thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I mean, yeah. This is from my heart. And, you know, nobody's paying me to say this, anybody. I just so you know. But it's where do you find where everybody wins? And look at the audience we got tonight. Everybody will take something away from this talk. And hopefully it will spur some creativity. And we will, I guarantee you, have a call to action. Mm-hmm. So I think about the alliances and partnerships in a broader term of how do you co-create collaboration across communities with diverse interests and find the sweet spot where everybody wins.
Right. Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you, Deborah. Michael.
You're welcome.
So the sweet spot, and I think both of you are really articulating a lot of what I was thinking, and that is there is an intersection point where a group comes together. And I study group therapy. I've practiced group therapy. I've been in group therapy. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the process of being an understanding group think is a very powerful process. And I think, like I said earlier, it's easy to galvanize people in fear and in fight or flight and in catastrophe thinking. It's powerful to galvanize people in resourcefulness and strength and empowerment. And that's what I find right now art has a potential more than ever. We are inundated with information at a nanosecond. We have our devices, which we're attached to, like we are attached when we're connected to our mothers, you know, as infants. It's like it's our identity. And the danger of that, I think, is that we miss out on the interaction and the communication that can happen. One way to bridge that is art. Because art communicates in a way that it speaks multidimensionally. It speaks of the mind, it speaks of the heart, it speaks of the psyche, and there we could also move to it speaks to the soul. It has the language of the soul. And more than ever, I think we are in this time in human history where we are not satisfied with the old structures. They don't work. For a variety of reasons. So art can become the creative vehicle to be the precipice that sets the way. And unfortunately, that is under attack right now. And it's being used in ways that are manipulative, and psychologically it's caused a division that's very disheartening. I think we could be inculcated with the disheartenment. Or what we could do is do what we're talking about, which is a call to action. Getting out, for instance, the coloring books is not a bad idea. It can help. You know, or some other more salient way that could speak to you about your nature, whether the medium is a performing arts or a visual arts or the written word, because our words have meaning and power. So I think we are in a ripe time where we can activate and utilize art to really shape groupthink in an empowering way. And I would like to see that be something that we make a commitment to. Yeah.
You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Hear thousands of our podcasts on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Learn about our travel programs to exciting domestic and international destinations. And when you're in the Bay Area, please join us live for any of our 500 programs each year. You can find us online at commonwealthclub.org. Now back to our program.
Great. That sort of leads to my next question. What makes art making so valuable in our modern times? Mm-hmm. And I'll start with Matt with that.
Sure. It's the practice of taking something from your internal world and putting it out for everybody. It's the sharing, and it's the communicating ideas amongst each other through your art practice that stimulates the conversations that we've been talking about with each other. And it's also the personal action, mm-hmm. right? Art making is something, again, doesn't require a lot of money, doesn't require a degree, doesn't require anything but the desire to go do it.
Right.
Right? And I think it also, one of the things that a creative practice also tends to have is there's been studies shown that it reduces anxiety and it decreases depression, it increases sense of well-being, you know, and decreases sense of being isolated and all those type of things that really start to get at you when you are into the things that are beating down. The weight of the world is upon your shoulders can be a very heavy and lonely place to be. Right? But we're all here for each other, and that's what community activation is. Mm-hmm. And if that's done through creative practice, which is, you know, art doesn't happen and have a community voice unless there's a community behind it that believes in what's happening mm-hmm. and wants it to succeed mm-hmm. and knows that, you know, in and above what it is, just the fact that it's being done is ultimately what I think is important. Mm-hmm. And it's what's so great about the art that's out there is that every single person in this room is going to create something different and have a different voice to contribute. Every single one of you. And that's fantastic. That's the only way we get to share what we're feeling and how we're interacting and living with each other mm-hmm. and what we can do for moving forward with our community to where we feel like we can still attack the problems of the world with a zest so that we can actually start to make some change for good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Damn it.
Deborah?
So I have always been interested in the meditative aspects of art. Early on, I joined a group, a meetup group, Contemplative Photography. It was very, very interesting. It was a little too zen for me. I have a lot of energy. And so I was looking for, so how do I take a lot of this raw energy and power and channel it so that I can use my creativity, use business background, and also help create an aesthetic that hasn't been viewed before with a different perspective. And so when we achieve something, endorphins, those feel-good endorphins are released when you're creating art, when you're achieving. I'm like, hey, give me more of those endorphins, right? They feel great. They make you want to do more and also brings a quiet to yourself internally. Because as Michael referenced before and Matt, we have so many inbounds on news and media. I mean, lots of stress. It's like we're stick figures and all these arrows are coming in. And our job is to figure out, well, how do I manage all of this and still be who I am and still be authentic? And I find for me on a personal basis that creating enables me to reveal more of my authenticity. It's enabled me to bring together tech, business, and art into an aesthetic that impacts people and piques their curiosity and starts conversation. And conversation can lead to collaboration, which can lead to greater synchronicity across the group, bringing people together. We have gotten to the point of yelling at each other or tweet wars. Let's be old school. Have a conversation. Imagine, I don't know about you, but I get thanked when I return phone calls because people don't expect it anymore. So if we go inward and allow ourselves to experience our creative practice, regardless of what it is, we are raising the bar for the quality of our level of interactions.
Well right. said.
Thank you.
Very nice said. I'm Michael.
Well said. So in our modern times, and I think both of you really eloquently referenced this, because we are so information overloaded, what I've noticed is when I sit with someone and I invite them to map out a dream in symbols and, you know, to draw it, or when I invite them to dialogue with an issue, literally like their script writing, they dialogue with its whether it's pain or addiction or they're dealing with anxiety, they have this dialogue in this. And what I notice is the following happens. Their breathing becomes more regulated. Their fight or flight response gets activated into what we call a relaxation response. Their extremities get warmer because they're not overly processing in a way that they're overstimulated, and their heart rate is overactive and their blood pressure is up. And so we begin to see literally experiences of people calming down, and they get connected to things of meaning to themselves and to the community. And their community might be their family. It might be their work community. But they think about not just me, but me and we. And there is this reciprocal relationship, which I find is not only inspiring to witness. Literally, I get to witness this with people. But what I get to notice is that how it goes back to what we talked about earlier, the sweet spot. Mm. And that becomes the bridge upon which we begin. Just that those little exercises, artistic exercises, where people begin to say how they can use their strengths and their awareness and their insights, and I might even say intuition and wisdom, to come up with their own solutions. So the focus doesn't be put on me as if I have this commodity on the market of the answers of life, because I don't. My credentials don't give me that. What I do is I help people listen to themselves. And that is what art can do as much as what I do in my consultation room, whether it's with an individual or a group. And if that can happen for free, why not? Mm. Why not?
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, the final question, it's a fun question. Describe your aha art consciousness moment where suddenly realization or inspiration hit you or something for the very first time. I'm going to start with Deborah first. With
yeah.
The artist.
Okay. Put me on the spot. So I'm going to tell you a story. I met a business colleague at a conference, and we developed a friendship, and her family's on the East Coast, and she was out visiting, and I had her over to my house for dinner. Her name is Joanne. And Joanne walked in, and she saw all these photos on the walls, and she's a New Yorker, so I don't need to say anything else, right? And she's like, oh, well, Who was the artist? Where did you get the photographs? Blah, blah, blah. How much did you pay? Where can I buy some? And I'm like, well, usually I am not at a loss for words. However, at that moment, I disappeared. I was stunned. I I didn't realize that what I was doing aesthetically could have an impact that way. And Joanne's son is a severe diabetic. He was doing fundraising for St. Barnabas Medical Center in New Jersey for the diabetic unit. So, I mean, I was so overwhelmed with her kind words that I said, hey, how about I donate something? And, you know, he can sell it, help raise some funds. Well, I did donate a photo, and actually it's the Illusions photo that's hanging in the Farmer Gallery. It's on the wall of framed photographs. And the hospital decided they weren't going to sell it. They wanted to put it in their unit. So it is hanging in the lobby of the diabetic unit at St. Barnabas Medical Center in New Jersey. And I had to sit back and go, okay, this is what's happening is bigger than what you ever thought. And I'm a pretty big dreamer, let me tell you. Those people who know me, they know. And it struck me that by bringing together a multitude of energy around photography and philanthropy, because in my heart, I'm a humanitarian. I care deeply about people. I want to help make a difference. And my big aha moment was, wow, I can make a difference. And it just, it is something I will never forget. That moment of, okay, this is not just for fun anymore. You can do something with this.
All right. Wow. Thank you, Deb. Matt, quickly, have a minute or so to tell
say
me.
Quickly?
Yeah, quickly. Because we're running out of time here. Gotta get the Q&A.
Okay, fine. So I've always had a predilection to curiosity, and I've always had, I guess I call it, I don't want to make fun of OCD, but I have this compulsion to arrange things, mm-hmm. right? And it gives me a deep sense of satisfaction when I do so.
Mm-hmm.
And so, right?
I agree.
And so, and going back to what I said at the very beginning, where you can make a buck out of what right. doing what you love, that's literally what I do, right? I get to spend my time with art, arranging it how I think it should go, and talking with the artist about the presentation. And that gives me so much ultimate joy and satisfaction.
It's not a bad job.
Right? And so my aha moment came when the first time I actually got to do this with somebody.
Mm.
I was a friend of mine who was curating shows. His name is Johnny Davis, Artwork SF. Much prop to them. They gave me my start and did a lot of good for a lot of artists. Johnny gave me the opportunity to do an installation because somebody flaked on him. And so I jumped at the chance to do it because I always like to do something that's different. I'm a curious kind of guy.
Yeah.
Right? And so, but talking with the artists about their presentation also led into conversations about their what their work was about, why they did it, which led to studio visits, which led to this whole immersion into the conversation about why artists create, right? So when I go into a studio and I talk to an artist, why are you creating? And it's this whole story about what they see and their perspective on the world, and it gives me a chance to also reflect and integrate anything from their experience that mm-hmm. might resonate with me. And so the aha moment was, there are people out there that like to think this way, and I want to be around these folks and do that. And so
right.
there you go.
All right. Michael.
Wow, that's powerful. It's inspirational. Wow, in terms of pairing two pieces together of yourself. So my aha moment is around music, and it's been sort of a theme throughout my life. And it really came together for me when I was deciding to marry what I was doing therapeutically with myself as a vocalist, who I had divorced myself from a long time ago because I didn't think the two worked well together. And for a variety of reasons, it was difficult for me to do both, you know, having a practice at night. And I found a way. And that moved into, that was in 2015, and I started to do singing for charity. And I sang in New York City. I did a cabaret called My Analyst Told Me.
He did.
And it was fun to talk about what it's like to be a therapist. I've been sitting for 30 years listening to people. 30 years. And that moment, it healed me because I had separated from myself. Mm. And that it gave me a connection of a dot, of a part of me that needed to express what was in me. And then that now has moved into, I've nearly finished the first act of a musical.
All right.
Around being a therapist.
All right.
And my aha came together when we did the first demo of some of our songs. All right. And it was a moment that has touched me deeper than I can put into words.
Mm. Right. That's afterwards.
So thank you.
All right. Thank you, panelists, for addressing the questions tonight. Before we do Q&A, we have something for the audience, a challenge for you, actually. It's a call for action. You're to do 20 related art activities in 2020. Are you up for the challenge?
Yes.
All right. So we'll now do Q&A. For Q&A, you'll use the mic here. Come up, state your name, and address your question to the panelists of your choice. All right?
So, you know, San Francisco Art and Tech. Thank you all, by the way. A sellout on January 6th for art. There's hope for 2020. There really is.
Right?
Thank you. Thank you for bringing us all together. You know, the work I do is because I care deeply about art and people who make art and people who love art. But how do we really connect to the art unaware? Because all of us have committed, most of us, for the 2020 challenge, 20 pieces of art of some kind this year. How do we reach into those who haven't had art education or don't know how important it is? The benefits of it. Mm. They are receiving it. Their lives are better because of it. But how do we make them aware so they support back to us? We have the first generation of full-grown adults that didn't really have art education. They're still learning from it, but they don't even have the vocabulary to know it's art that is making their life better.
Right.
So could you talk about that?
Yes. So, and I'll tell a story. When I was working with special needs children, what I used to do was get posters, big posters with lots of stuff, lots of different things. So, you know, that was pop art. And then utilize that and wrote questions, you know, kind of, I guess it's like those old highlights magazines. How many fish can you find, you know? How many women are wearing high-heeled shoes? You know, how many men have hats? But it forced the children, and these were very special needs children, to get outside of themselves and become aware that just by looking at a poster or looking at TV or reading a book or going to make your own poster, and I challenged these kids to pick a song they liked and to make something. They could, I didn't care what they used, toothpicks, Q-tips, popsicle sticks, cardboard, bricks. Each one of these kids, and these kids could not survive in a normal school. Okay, their next step was juvie. Each one of them took their favorite song. They wrote the words out. Okay, reinforce writing, reinforce English, right? Reinforce music, melody. Then they describe the song in some form. I'll never forget, one boy liked, I think, Chapel of Love. There was a song, Chapel of Love. And so he actually took all these sugar cubes and built this elaborate chapel and even used sugar cubes for the people inside. So there's multiple ways to connect people that we can help with art education. One is meetups. Expose people to something in a fun way. Connecting with the schools because the schools are running out of money, right? So we want to go into the schools. using various public forums like this, because everyone in here is hearing the message and can take it back and say to your school, hey, you know, I want to help put an art program in place. I'm a parent here. I'm willing to show up half a day a week and work with kids in fifth grade. They would love it. So those are just, and you know, I could talk about this. I could, because I'm an idea machine, so I could just spew all kinds of ideas. But those are a few ways to get started and to hook into corporations that support school and use art education as a vehicle.
Right. All right. Thank you, Deborah. Any more questions?
I'm Eris. So my question is, I'm wondering what your own definition of art is to you and how that's shaped your career.
Wow. You know, there's so much. Well, first of all, thank you for considering me an artist. That's a very lovely compliment. And it's nice to embrace that. You know, there's, for me, when I look at art, when I hear art, when I read, I specifically look at what it moves inside of me. Because music, sound, moved me, the first sort of genre that really spoke to me was soul, Motown. It was my body moved, my heart moved, the words made sense to me differently, and I found myself wanting to sing. And so that became sort of, I wanted music that moved me. I didn't want to be beige. Not that I'm beige, but I didn't really want to be beige in my emotional experience. So that's a little bit about what my influence was.
Yeah. You want to take a stab at it? Yeah,
sure.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I guess I consider art, or the practice of art, the creation of something that didn't exist until it was made. Right then. Mm-hmm. So from that standpoint, everything around us is art, right? Everything was concepted by somebody. Right. Everything. So not only visual arts or dance, but industrial arts, material arts. Mm-hmm. All these type of creative expressions, some of them have purely practical applications, but all of them have some inherent quality to them that makes them, if you just look at it for its aesthetic sensibilities, art. And so from that standpoint, man, I guess I look at everything as art. Mm-hmm. I define everything as art, and I try to live with everything as art.
Mm, yeah. Great.
All right. Another question?
So I've been involved with conscious art since I was a teenager. There was really a large black theater movement here, which spawned people like Danny Glover, Whoopi Goldberg, Carl Lumberly, et cetera, et cetera. So even though I was a youngster with Shabaku, who's actually on an CBS sitcom right now that's pretty big. So I know it's a question. And my question has a prelude because my company, La Hits, how many people have heard of La Hits? Okay, well, how many people have heard of, how many people have heard of YouTube, Facebook, Twitter?
Yeah.
Okay, so we started in 2003, which is before any of those companies putting video on the internet. And we again come out of a conscious political art type of thought. I really like what you said about dyslexia because I have dyslexia too. And also, Danny Glover has dyslexia. Mm. And the reason I found out about that is auditioning at the Magic Theater. And I ran into Danny, and he was like, well, I never read the scripts, as in they want you while auditioning to read the script. What I do is I go in early, I get the script from whoever the script supervisor is, and I memorize it. And then I act like I'm reading it. So that was a good hint from him and so there's a lot of people with dyslexia. We just learn different.
Right.
That's how we learn different. The founder of Virgin Air, et cetera, he's also dyslexic. Yes. So it's quite a few of us. So how can the broader social media help bring this to the broader populace? Because when I was filming, each one of these people here, all of you great people here, when you're doing this with my camera, each one of you represents 1,000 people that goes out to. Mm-hmm. So that's why I was doing that. Mm-hmm. So my question. we're kind of a Motown of the internet. So how does the internet work in helping this cause go further?
I'll speak to that to start with. One of the things that I did for this program was use the internet for sales, for marketing. And so, you know, not only personal emails, group emails, Facebook, Instagram. So, you know, I kind of brought business and tech and art all together to use various media channels. This will be podcasts, so that's another auditory channel. We're doing a video, and we'll see, that may end up on YouTube. So the challenge is, which channel is most effective? How do you measure that effectiveness? And how do you ensure your message is consistent so it doesn't get contorted like we've seen with some of the fake news and some of the media that's sponsored by Fox News, so to speak.
We're just about out of time, so we're going to have to wrap it up here. I want to thank the panelists, Matt McKinley, Deborah Reebok, and Michael F. Shea, for joining us this evening and addressing these questions.
Thank you.
Thank you both. This is lovely.
Thank you, Mike.
Really.
I would also like to thank the audience here and also our listening audience listening to the recording here tonight. And it's been a pleasure being your moderator for this program this evening. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California commemorating its 116th Year of Enlightenment discussion is officially adjourned. Mm-hmm. All right.